Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for stopping by. We have a truly fascinating conversation for you today, so let's jump into it. My guest today is a writer, community builder, and she is a brilliant entrepreneur. Back in 2008, an aggravating incident at work pushed her to decide to leave the job market and start building her own vision and business. She got her start then with founding the premier website for promoting arts and crafts in Pennsylvania, before moving on to creating an online publication called Scouty Girl. But for the past 5 years, my guest has been growing her now main business called CoCommercial, a fluff-free social network for small business owners on a mission. Now, let's hack Tara Gentile. Throughout this conversation you're about to hear, as with many conversations you hear on this show, you're going to hear about content marketing and using that to build a business. In fact, you're going to hear about how Tara, her first business was a website promoting arts and crafts in Pennsylvania. This tells me two things. One, that Tara is probably into arts and crafts and is from Pennsylvania. And the other one is that you can build a website that turns into a business around almost any topic. Do you have a cool idea that you want to turn into a website? Do you want to blog and publish content? And Squarespace is what you need to get started. They have beautiful templates created by world-class designers, analytics to help you grow in real time, free and secure hosting, and nothing to patch or upgrade ever. 2018 is upon us. It says you need a new website. Make it with Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code HACK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Once again, that's squarespace.com. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Tara, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely, absolutely my pleasure. And I think this can be a lot of fun. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Tara, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow. Well, that is a tough question. We're just going to start with the hard ones here today, right? I think the number one thing I do that's contributed to my successes is probably, and I actually just wrote a post about this today, but I think that this is the answer to this question for me, which is trying to become as aware as possible of all of the things that I don't know how to do. I think for me, and I think for many people, it's really easy to get comfortable in doing the same sorts of things, even if they look kind of different. Like I could try a different marketing technique, or I could try a different team building technique, or I could try all these different things that are essentially the same and get the same sorts of results. But one thing that I have noticed over the years is when I do those things, right, I do get the same sorts of results. I don't actually make any forward progress. And so over the years, I've tried to get more and more comfortable with not knowing how to do something or recognizing when someone has landed something huge. They've created an amazing new creative project. They've hit some milestone that I could never dream of. And instead of being intimidated by that, or instead of, you know, having that kind of comparisonitis come up, I've really tried to ask myself, well, what if that was my goal? What if I could figure out how to do that? What if I asked for help or asked how they did that and added that into sort of my bag of tricks as an entrepreneur? And so just, I think, getting more and more comfortable with what I don't know and the kind of the gap between where I'm at and where I potentially could be has allowed me to learn as much as possible. And really entrepreneurship for me is about learning. And so that's helped me, I think, get where I am now and has certainly helped me accomplish some of the things that I've, or a lot of the things that I've accomplished over the last 9 years.
Wow. So this is like something you're really sort of pushing ahead to? Like, I mean, you wrote the post today. Is this something we do, I think, as entrepreneurs, we tend to do is we try and, or I guess, no, I shouldn't even say that. What we try and talk about and what gets written about a lot is the whole just ignore everything that you're not good at because you shouldn't be wasting your time on it. And I like this attitude of actually, maybe I should learn that and sort of push myself to grow in those ways.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for leaning into your strengths and I certainly lean into my strengths very, very heavily. And I do try to avoid the things that I'm not good at. But I think there's a difference between what we don't know how to do or what currently seems impossible and what we are not good at. And so I've tried to, for myself, to kind of separate those things. And I also look at like, what are the scripts that I tell myself? So, you know, when I first started my business, I really was just starting off as a freelancer. I was just starting off as someone who was going to try and make some money on the side, right? I think a lot of us did, especially in the online business world. And so then like the idea that potentially I could make $100,000 in a year was just, it seemed impossible, just absolutely impossible. And then when that became just an easy thing for me to do, then I had to start looking for other things that seemed impossible, right? And so I started looking at, well, what would it take to make $1 million a year? Or what would it take to grow my list to 20,000 people or 50,000 people? What would it take to do this or that? And so kind of recognizing that there's a difference, I can lean into my strengths, I can lean into what I'm really good at and still accept, and at the same time, I think accept that there are things that feel impossible that don't have to feel impossible. And if I can identify which of those impossible things are things that, at least right now, I really want, then I can work to close the gap using my strengths and avoiding my weaknesses or finding help with the weaknesses when I need to make my reality actually closer to what those impossible things seem to be. And then really, really quickly for me, the impossible seems like, oh, that's just a matter of doing these different things that I've never done before. And while it may not happen tomorrow, I can totally see how it's going to happen. So I think there's kind of a both and going on there.
Fair enough. There's not a lot that's truly impossible. It's just right. It's just a matter of how many steps you want to take to get there. This point when you decided to become a freelancer, and you're right, that sort of transition freelancer to creating a business around it. But was there sort of a defining moment that caused you to just be like, I just can't work for somebody else anymore and I need to do this myself?
Yeah, absolutely. That moment came when I was 9 months pregnant and I had just interviewed for a promotion that had been all but assured to me and I had been training for really over a year. I was working as a retail manager at a Borders Books and Music, rest in peace. And I interviewed for the general manager job at my store. Interview went great. The connections were all there. The succession plan had been built and it all just looked like it was the logical next step for everybody, not just me, but for upper management as well. And I got a phone call the day I started my maternity leave that the job had been given to somebody else. And that person had less experience. They had less time with the company. They certainly hadn't been training for the job for the last year. And I was absolutely furious. And decided at that point that I was never going back to that store, of course. There was no way I could go back and be, you know, have someone else be my boss. If it wasn't going to be my old boss and if it wasn't going to be me, I wasn't going to be there. And at that point, after sort of the initial fury started to settle down, I started to think about, you know, all the people I knew who were not new personally, but I knew that they were out there, the people who were making money, working for themselves, working from home, many of them young mothers with great educations and great skills, but just maybe hadn't found the right jobby job. And so they were creating the job that they wanted for themselves in the place that was going to allow them to have, again, both being a mom and being, you know, having great work. And so I thought, well, if other people can do it, I certainly should be able to figure this out too. Although thinking back in regards to my first answer, it seemed impossible at the time, but clearly someone else was doing it. I would be able to do this too. So that was sort of the moment. It took me about 6 months to get started, to put up my first website. But as soon as I did, I started making connections and getting noticed and being able to kind of put offers out there that allowed me to start working from home. And very, very quickly, in fact, by the end of that first year, I had made more money than I was making full-time as a retail manager. Now, that wasn't a lot of money, but it was still an incredible accomplishment. And that was sort of my, that was definitely the first step in the trajectory of me really becoming an entrepreneur.
What was the first site? Can we ask? I can ask. Yeah. I don't know if you'll answer.
No, the first site was a blog for artists and craftspeople in Pennsylvania specifically. It was called handmadeinpa.net. And I just collected stories from independent makers and artists who were kind of making waves in what was at that time still a very young movement toward buying handmade and buying from independent designers and makers. And I would tell their stories and write these kind of really long features that not just like the typical blog interview, but really kind of more like a magazine feature style article. And I got through that site, I got on the radar of the Pennsylvania Guild of Craftsmen, which is one of the oldest professional crafts and arts, fine arts organizations in the country. And they wanted me to come teach workshops. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but sure, I'll figure it out. And that, yeah, so that really got me started. And from there, then I expanded out and expanded my market and expanded my skill set and all the things that I could offer. But that was the very first site.
I'm truly always fascinated by the trajectory of the careers of people that I talk to, because yeah, they're fascinating. But also, there seems to be this like overarching theme of content creation, putting it out to the world, no matter, having no idea who's going to be reading it or listening to it or watching it, and it getting found by somebody. And that sort of leads to the next stage of the career. Like,
yeah.
And today you published another post on Medium. Like, you would think that, well, okay, well, Tara's got like a full business and career now. Maybe she'll stop writing, but she doesn't.
No, content is everything. I live and breathe content. I just said that to one of our strategic partners yesterday. I was like, hey, you guys need some content? I live and breathe it. You don't do it. Let's make it happen. But for me, it's been both content and community building. So a lot of what I did with that initial site wasn't just the content. I mean, that was huge. That was sort of what you could see from the outside. But on the inside, I was really working to bring people together so that it wasn't just, hey, come check out my blog, or hey, come read this story, but it was instead like, hey, come meet these people. And we did that way back in the day with the initial Facebook group or Facebook community, whatever they called it back 9 years ago. We had a community there. People met. I follow these people still on Facebook. We're friends on Facebook still. And I see them, people who met through my website, who are still friends, who still talk, who still get together to this day. And it's an incredible thing to see the power, not just of the content, but also of the community building as well.
When you say you live and breathe content, is what sort of percentage of it, of your week, does it make up? Creation?
Ooh, not as much as I would like it to, I think. Although, depends on, I think, how you define content. So if we're only talking about the content marketing that goes out to the public, then, you know, it's really only a few hours out of a 40-hour week. But because I run essentially what is a social and support network for small business owners now, a lot of content gets generated internally too. So you don't necessarily see that unless you're a member, but I'm constantly posting there. I'm constantly answering questions there. I'm constantly just having conversations on that site. And so a lot of content gets built there. And really, content is, other than running the company, which is maybe a half-time job, content is my other half-time job. It's what I do. And so it takes a different form today than it used to, but it's still a big part of what I do. It's not necessarily putting out 3 or 4 blog posts a week like I did a long time ago, but instead it's taking that same awareness, it's still taking that same process, that same recognition of what the questions are, what the needs are, and just funneling into a slightly different place.
Right. And this is co-commercial you're talking about.
Yes, this is co-commercial.
So when you're talking about creation on the inside for the community, and you just said like answering questions and sort of figuring out what needs to be answered, how, like, what's that process look like?
Sure. So we have stepped away from offering any kind of content library. So a lot of times when people think about a quote unquote membership site, they think about a content library that you have a password and a username to. You log in, you get the content you need, and you leave. CoCommercial is different in that we are a community-based network. So people come to us and they ask, I need help with this particular tool. I just saw someone use this marketing technique. I'd love to learn more about that. I've seen a couple of people try this new fad. It's clearly a new fad, but what can I learn from it? Or maybe they're having a particular challenge or obstacle in their business. And when I say they come to us, I don't mean us, the team. I mean us, the community. And so people who have kind of firsthand knowledge of whatever is being asked about respond to that. And because I have a lot of firsthand knowledge of a lot of the things that people ask about, I end up answering a lot of questions or sharing my perspective. And so for me, it's really, and I think about this, whether it's content marketing or whether it's internal content creation, it's a lot of call and response where I'm not the one doing the calling, I'm the one doing the responding. So if I'm putting up a blog post externally, it's in response to what I see as a call in my email list, in my community, in my audience as a whole. It may be a specific question. It may be a problem that I've diagnosed or a complaint that I'm hearing regularly from people about how their businesses are run. But I look at anything I publish as a response to something that's already out there. In the community, that just gets a lot more concrete. It gets a lot more obvious. People are literally calling to us with a post or a question or, you know, whatever it might be and saying, hey, this is what I need help with. And I respond to that, or my team members respond to that, or, as is most often what happens, our community members respond to that. And so for me, that process is always, like I said, call and response, call and response. And so as a content marketer over the years, my goal has been to be as aware of all of those different calls as possible so that I can craft the responses that are going to be most helpful and also the responses that are going to help me get where I want to go, the ones that are going to help me meet my objectives.
This seems like it's kind of essential for your one thing, like becoming aware of things you're not good at and sort of figuring out how to do them and things that aren't impossible to you anymore. Because I've seen within communities sometimes that somebody will ask you a question, like this new fad thing that I know is a fad, but I still want to know about it. And the person leading it will be so like sort of in their lane and they don't want to veer out of it that they'll just be like, no, that's bad, or do this. And it kind of stays within that. So like, is this sort of the process where you have to kind of, I guess, be empathetic to other people's opinions on things and kind of move yourself around and not just be like, well, this is the tarot way, so this is the right way to do it no matter what you ask me?
Yeah, I am not a this is just the right way and this is the wrong way kind of person. I am definitely hey, let's look at all the cards on the table and figure out how to solve this particular problem in the way that's going to be best for you, or with the constraints that we have, or with the rules that we have in front of us. So yes, empathy is a huge component of this. And I honestly don't consider myself a hugely instinctively empathetic person. I'm a INTP, the Myers-Briggs. I'm very much a thinker, not so very much a feeler. I don't necessarily recognize someone's emotional needs or like kind of the between the lines kind of stuff that goes on. But I actually think that that's been a benefit to me with content and with community building, because I've had to really train myself and lift my awareness of that empathetic response, just like you were saying, so that I can find the happy medium toward what may be very, very strong opinions, because I have a lot of very, very strong opinions, and what someone needs to hear for them in that moment with their set of constraints, their set of rules, their set of needs, and find a way to kind of bridge that gap and maybe share my really strong opinions, but in a way that they can hear it. And that's definitely something I try to model and that our team tries to model inside of Co-Commercial for other people as well. Because to me, that's not just a great lesson for helping other entrepreneurs. It's also a great lesson for responding to your own market, your own audience, your own email list, your own community at the same time. So we try and we really try to model that behavior and really think through how we can be heard best and also communicate either our opinions or our experience in a way that's going to be most helpful.
Now, before we get to asking Tara about how she chooses projects, I do want to go back to this idea of using content marketing to as a call and response. So having your audience call out questions and you creating content, whether it's video, podcasts, or the written word, using that to respond to these questions, concerns, and issues. What if you don't have a community like Tara has? Well, it's not the end of the world, but you do need a way to ask questions. Remember, what you ask matters and how you ask is everything. To do this simply and beautifully, you need to use Typeform. It's versatile. You can use it at every stage of your funnel to research, lead generation, sell stuff with Stripe, and to ask the questions that you can respond to. And the very best part of Typeform is you can sign up for free today for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. Plus, you can upgrade to their pro and get 30% off for the first 6 months. Go to typeform.com/hack. They have an incredible support staff and help center to get you going fast. Once again, to get started for free, go to typeform.com/hack. All right, let's get back into the conversation. Let's move, if we can, Tara, to projects.
Sure.
Projects is a really loose term, but any sort of project, I guess, within Co-Commercial or within what you do for coaching or speaking even. I mean, you're a person with a team, lots of ideas are being brought to you, complaints, you're doing the responding. So I'm sure there's lots of ideas that you need to filter out and decide what it is you should be focusing on. So I would love to know, what is the process, and whether it's a written or just an internal sort of gut process you go by, but what's the process you're going through right now to determine when a project is worth not only your time, but also your team's time, energy, and resources?
Yeah. So I try to have only one core goal that we're working toward at any given time. And every other project that falls onto our calendar or into our laps has to fit somehow into that one goal. And we can define that pretty broadly. So like right now, we have a goal for quarter one of revamping our pricing strategy and our sales funnel that goes along with it. So that's sort of, it sounds like a lot of work, and it is, but it's one core thing that we're working toward. And there's a revenue goal with that, and there's a membership goal with that. And that's the one thing that we're working toward. Now, we certainly have community projects that are going on at the same time, and we have operational projects that are going on at the same time, and we certainly have marketing projects that are supporting that goal as well. But each of those things falls sort of into a hierarchy under that one target. And if I can't, at least fairly comfortably, make a project fit in the hierarchy under that one target, then it doesn't belong in this quarter's plan, or it doesn't belong in this year's plan, even if it doesn't fit in with our annual target as well. So I've, when it comes to projects, I've tried to really streamline what the focus or the target is as much as possible, and use that as a framework for whether something fits or not, whether now is a good use of our time or not. I've also had to get really clear on where my time is best used and where my team's time is best used. And there may be a project that I would love to take on, or that I think is really cool and I would just like to be a part of it. But more often than not anymore, I have to ask one of our team members to own projects that aren't in my direct sphere of work inside of our team. So I do the executive stuff and I'm in charge of our marketing, but we have people who do everything else. And so if it doesn't fall into those two little buckets that I'm in charge of, someone else on the team needs to own that project. That project still needs to fit into that quarterly target that we've got, and it's got to fit into the hierarchy, and it's got to make sense as part of moving toward that goal. but also someone else needs to own it. And I think ownership has been an important, or the moving toward team ownership of things has been an important thing that we've really worked on over the last 6 months or so. So I've got fabulous people who work for me, and they are willing to take the lead on things and get things done the way they want it to be done and the way they think it should be done, in, you know, in accordance with everything else that we're doing and the way that we do things and the values that we have. But they take ownership of it. And that means that I don't have to put nearly as much kind of mental capacity to it. So that's kind of another way that we balance projects and how we decide what's going to get done and what's not going to get done.
So having this one core focus, you mentioned pricing being it, and you very recently wrote an article on Medium about that, which I'll link to for everyone. But you wrote about your pricing, and you talked in there about how you chose to sunset your signature program, Quiet Power Strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So is this sort of just the other side of the coin of focusing on co-commercial and the, like, the pricing aspect of it? Like, to me, that's almost as hard of a decision is to sunset a signature program as it is to start a new one.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think it is the same side or a different side of the same coin. Just the same thing that I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about plans, projects, goals is what I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about business models as well. To me, and I will fully admit that I compartmentalize a lot when it comes to the way I think and then my attention and my energy. And it's really hard for me to split focus. But I think for most of us, it's really hard to split focus. And I think a lot of us have learned how to do it, but that doesn't mean we do it well. And so just like it's really only possible for me to focus on one target when it comes to the quarter, the next 12 weeks, it's really only possible for me to focus on one offer at a time. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have a variety of ways that we make that offer, but we really only ever, or at least when we're successful, we really only ever are focused on one offer, one core value proposition. There might be different levels of that value proposition, or there might be different containers we give to that value proposition, but that value proposition is the one and only thing that we're focused on. So for us with co-commercial, the value proposition behind co-commercial, that is the only thing that we offer right now. There's a couple of different ways that people can get involved with it, but it's the only thing that we're creating value around in terms of our business model. I can't do it any other way. Every single time I've tried, I have failed miserably, and I will fully admit to that. And so again, focus, focus, focus has been my mantra when it comes to business models. And I think focus breeds traction too. The more focused I've been, the more people get on board with whatever I'm doing, whether it's the brand, the business model, even a particular goal. The more focused I am, the more focused my team is, the more focused our output is, the more I notice people being receptive to it. The more I try and split focus, or maybe, you know, talk about this thing and then talk about that thing, the less people pay attention. So focus for me has sort of been like the secret weapon of success.
Co-commercial as it stands has been around for 5 years.
Co-commercial as a community has been around for about 5 years. As a brand, we're about 1 year old now.
Okay. So the community's been around for 5 years. How did you like acquire your first customers for that community?
Let's see. So the community was born out of me trying to focus. And so about 5 years ago, I was really good at creating lots of little products, you know, an ebook here, a little video course there, a little live training over here. And it was really hard to sell these things over and over again. And so I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if I just said, I'm going to give you access to everything I create for a year? And at that point, I had already started growing an email list. I had already started growing a Facebook page. I'd already basically, you know, I had all of the marketing assets that we're used to in one variety or another. And while my reach wasn't huge, I had a nice audience of people who were reading my blog posts and receiving my emails. And so when I put that subscription offer out, I cannot tell you how many people purchased at this point. It wasn't a ton for sure, but those were the initial members of that community. And the offer has evolved quite a bit over the years. The community has evolved quite a bit over the years. But a lot of those initial people that bought from us, people who had just come from the Facebook page or largely came from the email list, are still with us in the community today. They still show up to live events. They still post in the community from time to time. And so really, going back to content marketing, I got my first customers through content marketing. Whatever distribution channel that might have gone through, it was still content marketing. And so that was the initial start of it.
And now, 5 years later, how drastically has that customer acquisition changed?
Not at all. I really don't know how to do it any other way. I mean, like I said, the distribution channels have changed. The place where the blog posts go has changed. The podcast in the mix now. We do live video. I do webinars. My email provider has changed. But really, the fundamentals, the basics, the mechanics of it aren't any different now than they were 5 years ago. I'm better at it now. I have better systems. My skills are much, much better. But the mechanics of it haven't changed at all.
So the sort of platforms and mediums you're using, such as Medium itself for publishing blog posts.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like last year, I think I got started maybe like in September is when we started publishing posts on Medium. And I'm loving Medium. It's super fun because it feels like the internet used to feel 5 or 10 years ago. People find you, they leave comments, they engage with your content. You can see who's reading you. It's really, really cool. And so I've been playing over there, like I said, podcasting as well. About 2 years ago, I made a decision to go pretty hard into podcasting. I love podcasting. I love talking to people. It's certainly part of the way we think about bringing people together and sharing stories and giving people access to the behind the scenes and the nitty gritty of how other people run their businesses. And so those things are different now for sure, but the process behind them and how I approach them and that call and response bit, that's all exactly the same.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Tara, this has been a fascinating and fun conversation. I do want to wrap up on one final question for you, if
sure.
I could.
Absolutely.
You actually mentioned it earlier in the conversation, this gap. This gap we call, I think, the entrepreneurial sort of gap, or that's what I've been referring to it as for several hundred conversations now. But you're right in the fact that there's this gap often as, I think, entrepreneurs, as builders, as dreamers of things, we're always sort of pushing our own personal successes into the future. So in 1 month when you hit that revenue metric or 6 months when you stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yet, Tara, both you and I know that seconds before you hit that, there's going to be 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. Absolutely, we need that. But for a couple moments, I would love it if we could, or if you could, just stop and turn around and look behind you. Since that fork in the road where you didn't get that job you were supposed to and you just decided to do your own thing, I'm sure there's been many highs, lows, wins, and losses. But can you tell me just how you feel about the whole kind of crazy journey up until today?
Oh, man. It's not, we started on a hard question. We're ending on a hard question. The way I feel about this whole crazy journey is just, I'm incredible. At the risk of sounding totally humble, I am so proud of myself. I am so proud of what I've accomplished. I'm so proud of what I've created, especially even just in the last few years. And I don't think it's because I'm more successful now than I was a few years ago. I think it's because I've really challenged myself to up-level the quality of what I put out, the way I think about things. And so when I look back at the evolution of the output of myself and my company, I'm so proud. And I'm tickled every day by what we get to do and what we get to put out. You know, when I was a kid in college, this is 2000 to 2004, the internet was really just hitting its stride. I mean, it had been around for a while and I had loved it for as long as it had been around, but it was really hitting its stride there at the turn of the century. And all I ever wanted to do was hang out on the internet and talk to cool people and read cool things and write cool things. And I get to do that for a living now. It is literally my job. And I could not be more happy and more proud of it.
That's awesome. You should be.
Thanks.
So we've got to talk about your business throughout this conversation, but now I would love it if you could specifically tell the listener what CoCommercial is and who it's for, I guess, and how it can help them.
Yeah, CoCommercial is a support and social network for small business owners online. And we know there's a lot of different places that you can go to try to connect with other small business owners. There's free Facebook groups, there's courses, all of those good things. We try and do it best, frankly. And we're pretty different because we're a really dedicated space that is just absolutely consumed with giving you the best direct access to people who've been there, done that, or still doing it every single day. And so what we do is help people really become aware of and acknowledge the obstacles that they're running into, the questions that they have, the knowledge gaps that exist in their plans, the snags that they hit, the resistance that they feel, and become more and more comfortable asking for help around those things. And then we as a community come together and offer help, whether that's, you know, a tech solution to something, whether that's a suggestion or a recommendation of an app or a book or another piece of technology, or whether it's something much more strategic and in-depth, we're there for it, basically. And so that's what CoCommercial is all about. It's about meeting other small business owners who get it. It's about figuring out what's really working instead of what some guru says worked for them once. It's about discovering the truth for yourself. And it's really about creating connections that are going to last you a lifetime as an entrepreneur. So that's what CoCommercial is all about. If anyone wants to check it out, we're at cocommercial.co.
Awesome. I love it. So cocommercial.co, medium.com. I'll track down Tara for you and put it over there, as well as that pricing strategy article. The podcast is Profit Power Pursuit.
That's correct.
Excellent. I'll find a link to that also because we have some podcast listeners here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think they'll dig it. But the CoCommercial, it's a great pitch for, I think, probably a great project or product. And so I think I'm going to check it out because, yeah, you made a great pitch there and a great case for yourself as a leader of that community. So I'm looking forward to it. All right, Tara, this, again, has been an absolute blast. I truly thank you for sharing so openly and joining me today. And I don't know, just please keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Well, same to you. I hope you keep doing what you're doing. And thank you so much for having me.
That was fun. And we covered a lot of ground in 30 minutes. We went from self-awareness to content marketing for customer acquisition and many sort of points in between. Throughout the conversation, there was these sort of points that really stood out to me from what Tara said. So I had to go back through the conversation, and I did. I went back through the conversation and I listened again, sort of as a third party, as you get to listen to. And as I went back through it, there was one thing that Tara said that I think maybe it didn't quite resonate as much as it did when I went back. But it was it. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And it's really hard for me to split focus, but I think for most of us, it's really hard to split focus. And I think a lot of us have learned how to do it, but that doesn't mean we do it well. And so just like it's really only possible for me to focus on one target when it comes to the quarter, the next 12 weeks, it's really only possible for me to focus on one offer at a time.
And that's the hack. Tara, Tara, Tara. I love this. This, I mean, is something that I started doing a year ago now, maybe 2 years, but sort of the quarterly goals, or as Tara says, the quarterly focus. This is crucial to, I think, moving forward, because Tara does say we've learned to sort of split our focus, but we haven't learned to really do it well. We've convinced ourselves that we can do it and that we can multitask and do all this stuff, but it is best to have that one sole focus through the 12-week period or a quarter of a year. 1 year is too long, and you need to sort of, sometimes that focus needs to change in the second quarter or third quarter of a year. This is great. This is the beginning of a new year, and it's a great way to think about stopping yourself and helping yourself to stop splitting your focus. So the question was about stopping an offer or stopping a project in the sense of projects and how we normally talk about starting them. But this was when Tara said how I can typically only have one focus throughout a quarter. I can also typically only have one offer. She goes on to say how you can have sort of different subsets underneath that offer, but it's not offers all over the map. It's one sole focus. You've heard this so many times, to stay focused and stay focused and stay focused. It's really hard, again, to do that in a long-term way. Break it down to a quarter. Break it down to that 12-week period. Find what you want to focus on and just refuse to absolutely split your focus from that. At the end of that quarter, reevaluate and decide what you want to work on next. Tara, thank you so very, very, very much. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. This does bring us to the end of another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. The website is hacktheentrepreneur.com. I will have Tara's show notes over there for you, everything we talked about on this. Also, make sure to check out cocommercial.co if you are at all interested in joining Tara's community. I'm sure she would love to have you over there. All right, it's been fun. I really, truly do appreciate you stopping by. So please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.